Today on the show, we talk about the pervasive theories surrounding the Pokemon world and war. Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Lawrence.
And today we've got a very special, special episode. Just from the amount of research that both of us have been doing, we've got a very just lore-heavy episode for you today here at Lore Party.
Oh, yeah. This is, I didn't realize this was going to be one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking today about a lot of different theories, thoughts, and evidence of war in the Pokemon universe. And I think it's something that I really, really have, you know, thought about. I think all of us have thought about, for lack of a better word, you know, we've not wanted it, but we've wanted to know more about it. There's obvious, like, clues and hints, but it's just kind of something that I don't know about you, but like I almost feel obsessed at of just like what kind of wars happened in a universe where you have animals just running around that can be domesticated and, you know, basically level a building.
Right.
All right. So, Lawrence, you did a lot of research just on some of these theories. And, you know, one of the longest standing ones is like the one from Red and Blue. Can you kind of like give us a rundown?
So the Pokemon theory, the Pokemon War theory, rather, stems from the first two games and a little bit of, like, basically something that Lieutenant Surge says after you defeat him in Vermilion City. So Lieutenant Surge makes this comment about how his Pokemon saved him in the war. And if you play through, you know, Pokemon Red and Blue and even Pokemon Gold and Silver in this different region, you start to realize that, like, there's a tremendous lack of middle-aged adults. So in Pokemon Red and Blue, you know, you play obviously play as the character Red and your rival is Blue. And Blue doesn't have parents. He's an orphan who's been raised by his granddad and lives with his sister. And Red just has a mom, and no one ever talks about the fact that these two don't actually have, like, you know, full families. And then when you travel out into the world, you realize that when you run into adults, they're all really old. Like, it's always Professor Oak age adults and then kids like bug catchers and whatnot. And then when you think about that even further, you start to realize that, like, hey, they sent a 10-year-old kid out to explore the entire world and to document all of the different, you know, Pokemon that you run into. So the theory is that, you know, close to the beginning of the game, if not, like, I guess when you're before or right around the time your characters are born, there is either a mass regional war between several different regions in the Pokemon world, or just between Johto and Kanto because they're neighboring civilizations. But apparently the war was so so huge and so bloody that it wiped out mostly all of the adults and just left the children.
So yeah, that's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
And I want to, like, I don't know if you want to talk about this now or later, but I really wanted to talk about, like, why this theory is so powerful. I feel like for a world and a society that almost seems just too clean, too utopian, too perfect, there has to be something darker underneath it that I think we all, almost in human nature, want out of the Pokemon world as we grow older, as we ourselves become adults. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, the Pokemon world in itself is almost this, like, utopian society. There's, like, seems to be, like, a perfect harmony between, you know, animals and nature, or, you know, animals and humans and like nature and civilization. There's like, there's this balance. It's almost an almost inhuman balance. And so I think what makes this theory so interesting to people is because it's like a very humanizing, it's a very humanizing thing. Like you wouldn't expect anyone in the Pokemon world. You wouldn't expect there to be war in the Pokemon world. You'd expect there to be battles, and battles are how society solves its issues. You know, battles are a form of entertainment. Battles are how we develop these lifelong rivalries that help us grow and make our Pokemon stronger. But war is war. War is taking lives, whether it's the lives of a person, it's the lives of a Pokemon. Like, we know that Pokemon are, you know, potentially deadly.
Right. And, you know, we've seen, obviously, in our world, a lot of war. And, you know, as long as there's been domestication of animals and animal husbandry, we have brought animals into war. Even today, with, like, you know, modern warfare, having dogs, you know, being there for combat, they are there to help in the war, to do things that either humans can't or don't want to do. And, you know, putting that on just the farthest end of the spectrum with superpowered animals just feels like it would be so easy, you know?
Right. Like, just look at the attack Hyper Beam.
If you had like 100 Pokemon all doing Hyper Beam, like, that would be worth like hundreds of pounds of TNT right there.
Right. Especially when you're like, you know, hey, don't hold back, kill them.
Right.
The theory kind of seems a little out there. Like, you know, it's like, yo, you killed all of the middle-aged adults. How is that possible? But then you look at it like, there are Pokemon that can, you know, generate electricity and that are like, you know, tall skyscrapers and that can melt boulders. So when you think about it, it's almost, it seems very possible. It's like, oh yeah, you know, this is why we don't have a war with Pokemon, because like, they're capable of these things, and you know, people who are at war are capable of doing anything. It's one of I guess, in my opinion, one of the things that makes it super unbelievable also makes it the most believable.
I mean, it just seems like such a real and I feel like logical step in the Pokemon world.
Yeah.
And I think, like, whatever you look at, more than anything, we at least know factually that the Pokemon world that we see today, the modern Pokemon world, has not always had this long period of peace. It has not always been that way. We see that with Lieutenant Surge, right, who is part of a military. A military force is established. There's a reason for that. And that much we can be able to go on.
And he did say, and it's canon, he did say that Pokemon saved his life during the war. So
the war.
And that Pokemon were involved. So like, that we do know that in some respect, regardless of if every other part of the theory is incorrect, we know that the Pokemon world has experienced a war and that they do utilize Pokemon in times of war.
Right. So other two examples that I know of, one is the Pokemon movie from 2005, Lucario and the Mystery of Mew. Lucario, which is like this bipedal dog Pokemon, makes its debut in this movie where it is like frozen in time, or like brought to the modern world after, you know, being encased, I believe, just in stasis for hundreds, if not thousands of years after a cataclysmic medieval war. And you see armored Pokemon on both sides doing these huge giant moves. And a medieval war with Pokemon already sounds like something out of, you know, someone's fan book, but like, it's confirmed here. On top of that, we also have the Pokemon X and Y lore of, let's see, the Pokemon Generations episode 18 called The Redemption, where it kind of dips more into it, of the Pokemon of the Pokemon X and Y game, where there is a endless war that's going on in the Kalos region about 3,000 years ago, where a man, where a king loses his favorite Pokemon, brings it back to life by building a large machine that he then shoots up and destroys the region, ending the war, but killing hundreds, if not thousands, maybe even millions of lives in what almost seems like a proto nuke.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I did not know about that.
And this is canon. Like, this happens in just some of the Pokemon anime and mentioned in the Pokemon lore. But we're more privy to being shown the older Pokemon wars from hundreds, if not thousands of years ago, making it seem archaic. And, you know, that, you know, I really like that. I wish we could get a little bit more, but there's nothing on a modern war except for what they did with Red and Blue with Lieutenant Surge.
Right. And then, like, you know, that's all you get. You get nothing else on, you know, whatever conflict that he was talking about. And, you know, you're just left to wonder, like, hey, what happened to all of, you know, these adults in this region? And even when you look past the adults, you know, the adults being missing, there are a lot of other clues that kind of point to there being some sort of cataclysmic event that took place, because your whole journey is about documenting, you know, Pokemon that you encounter. And I guess the older you get, you start to realize, like, hey, what sense does it make to have a 10-year-old child go around the world and, like, categorize Pokemon when we see that there are actually scientists in this world? But it makes sense that if there was some sort of, like, large scale event that happened, that there's a ton of information that was lost that needs to be recovered. And, you know, even in our last episode, we talked about how, like, there are these, like, wild and crazy Pokedex entries. And, you know, we made the comment with Shedinja about, like, hey, what if this didn't actually happen? This was just someone's interpretation and everyone ran with it. Like,
yeah.
What if that was because all information about this Pokemon was lost and the only thing that we could go off of was what someone thought happened?
I really like that kind of approach. And, you know, it really does kind of support that theory of, like, why, like, in a peaceful modern world with more than enough people with specialized skills, why would you need children to go out and study these animals that are potentially deadly just by looking at them, if not for the fact that there isn't anyone else left to do that?
Right.
You know, especially in times of crises, a lot of cultures tend to lean on the younger generation to kind of just kind of take that L and, you know, go out and kind of build this foundation where many of those from the older generation either are too busy, too old, too weak, or too dead.
Yeah. So the final part of the war that I want to get into is like one of the most interesting parts is, you know, when you think about, okay, like there is a war. Like, who was going to war and why were they going to war in this time? And so there are several theories on that. One of the theories are that, like, you know, every region just went at it and there was a large scale, like, world war. But the good theory, I feel like, is Kanto versus Johto, because there are so many supporting facts. They were said that the conflict was over their different forms of government, and that tensions between the two regions grew over time, and there were territorial disputes, which is why Kanto has missing number, because it was said that missing number was supposed to represent Pokemon that were originally in Kanto that migrated over to the Johto region. Due to territorial disputes, which is funny because you can even look at that as like Pokemon that were supposed to be released in Generation 1 that were released in Generation 2. But, and you know, these are, and if you look at the map, these are border regions. So it's like two.
Right, yeah. They're divided by Mount Silver.
Yeah. And it's two warring states. And I'm glad you actually brought up what, you know, what the divide is, because the theory goes that it was many years after, you know, in the period, many years after Red and Blue, where we have gold and silver, that tensions are still high, or tensions are still there, but they're slowly de-escalating. And the fact that they let you participate in the Kanto Pokemon League is supposed to be a show of good faith. And that the battle between, you know, the battle between Red and Gold is supposed to kind of signify the reunification of those two regions. Like, they look at the reason why Pokemon battles and the Pokemon League is so popular in these times is because you're still training people for potential conflict.
I've also been listening to, if you know, the PBS Idea Channel. They had an episode about this, and they were also running around with the idea of the gym leaders kind of as an idea of a sheriff in a town. They are the strongest in the region of their respective towns, where they kind of are the law of the land. And, you know, the Pokemon League are kind of like the para, like semi-military, in a sense, where like they're the last line of defense.
Okay. Yeah, no, I like that, actually. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, but stick around because we'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael from the Lore Party Podcast Network. I'm the producer and host of Minigame, a podcast that takes a deeper look at the stories of our favorite video games. Every episode is only about 5 to 10 minutes long, and I analyze the themes, characters, and stories in the games we love and highlight games you may never heard of before. Subscribe to Minigame and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and anywhere else you find podcasts.
As we're talking about this, we also have to think about just the consequences of what war can have with the kind of power that would come with the Pokemon universe.
Right. And even look at, like, what are the effects that make it into even, like, the peacetime era that, you know, are signifiers that there was a war?
Yeah. So, you know, as we talked about before, war with animals is nothing new. You know, we got cavalry horses, combat dogs. But when you put, like, giant fire-breathing dragons and, you know, animals that can literally explode on command, that's gotta be, you know, something that needs to be taken into account for when you look at a world like that and how it could even sustain itself for longer than a century without, you know, us just kind of destroying ourselves to kingdom come. You really have to think about the kind of balance between a trainer and their Pokemon. And if what we at least come to understand, you know, the Pokemon world's Pokeballs are very recent, very new. And I think that definitely plays a very interesting and integral part of this theory, in the fact that what we know as the modern Pokemon world has known war, but not war with the advancement of Pokeballs, which, you know, before that you would just have a very good understanding with your Pokemon, and that would be it. It maybe like 2-3 max Pokemon that would be kind of under your command, but with, you know, just Pokeballs kind of domesticating them almost instantly, you can only imagine the kind of destruction that kind of industrialized domestication can do for these overly destructive, basically monsters.
Oh yeah. No, that paints a picture, and I have like so many responses. So you're right. Like, having a Pokeball that instantly, you know, domesticates a Pokemon, it's a crazy thing to think about, because when you consider that they're like legendary caliber Pokemon, and you know in the game that you can throw a Pokeball after you weaken it and capture it, and so, you know, you let loose like a Zapdos or a Moltres or Entei or anyone, and it's gonna do a lot of damage. And like, you know, just like you were saying, like, you know, people use animals in combat now. I can only imagine, like you were saying, a group of people on flying Pokemon, like attacking strategic points or like poisoning water supplies or, you know, using certain Pokemon to do like unspeakable things. It's crazy.
Like some Pokemon are walking war crimes.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. We see like kind of two other things that kind of come out of war and are like the direct impact of war. One thing that you notice in Pokemon in every game, there is a lot of crime organizations. You rarely see law enforcement, but you see a lot of terrorist organizations like Team Rocket, Team Magma, Team whatever. You know, there are a bunch of teams. You get one per game, basically, or two sometimes. And they all seem to have the general goal of like conquering the world and being the one commanding power through the use of Pokemon. And just like in modern times, we see like organizations like this kind of splinter off from military conflict. Like what once was a part of like an official military that's no longer needed, or, you know, maybe a group, a, you know, subsection of a military organization that's gone too far or doesn't agree with the rest of them, splinters off into its own, you know, kind of a guerrilla faction and then grows from there.
For all of, you know, the Pokemon world, or at least the Pokemon developers, avoiding modern warfare, they do not shy away from modern terrorism, crime syndicates, things that are very, in my opinion, very adult themed, very mature for an audience of children, that really just, you know, going, like, talking more about war or war being prevalent almost seems like just a very small step from what they already have right now.
Right. And the show makes light of Team Rocket as they're, you know, bumbling idiots, you know, that are always getting blasted away by Ash. But in the, you know, point, like the real thing there is that like Team Rocket is a very sophisticated criminal organization. Like they do.
They're an actual threat.
Yeah. And I mean, they have funding and resources that like that make them a very strong like organization that you should fear. I mean, Giovanni, their leader, is actually a gym leader, so he's a part of the the official Pokemon League. But you see that they have funding in different areas like genetic research, because it was Team Rocket and Giovanni that cloned Mew and made it more powerful. They created the ultimate psychic Pokemon.
You know what just kind of dawned on me? Team Rocket's not a crime syndicate. It's not a mafia. A mafia does not make crimes against humanity and like clone animals to overtake the world. Giovanni may seem like, you know, a mob boss, but like his goals are so lofty and in line with more so a dictator,
yeah,
than it is, you know, Al Capone or something.
Right, because he's got that whole, you know, that philosophy of Team Rocket is like, you know, like it's not like, oh, we're like a terrorist organization. It's like the world is probably better under Team Rocket's control. And like, you know, we can guide people to like, the, you know, a better future. And really, it's just like we're going to control everyone.
And I wonder if that's also like, this is me theorizing more on myself here, that Giovanni, or at least Team Rocket, got its start through kind of war profiteering, of like what it does is steal Pokemon. But if it steals Pokemon and then sells them to different nations for to enlist in their armies, that sounds like, you know, probably where they get a lot of their money too.
Right.
So, I mean, what I kind of hypothesized myself and what I really took away from this is how much the modern Pokemon world that we see now is such a reflection of our current world. What happened in the past happened, and it's somewhat similar to our own. You know, we have, you know, we're living in one of the most peaceful times in human history right now. But you couldn't tell by looking at it, because we have, you know, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, you have, you know, North Korea, and the ever constant fear of nuclear annihilation by the push of a button.
Right.
I'm sure a lot of people in the Pokemon world have that same kind of feeling. I think Pokemon battles are kind of there as this kind of proxy conflict that, you know, you can just have this kind of sportsmanlike show of force and control, show the power of the partnership between trainer and Pokemon without having to kill each other and just kind of, you know, my kid's going to battle your kid and we're going to see who represents the best and brightest future for our countries.
Yeah, which what region, you know, develops the best trainers, has the best Pokemon, you know, and can take this championship. That's why when we were talking about, like, it's so powerful in Gold and Silver that you can participate in the Kanto Pokemon League. Because it's more of that, you know, showing of that the rivalry and the past history of, you know, potential violence, you know, it's still there. We still remember this, but this is our way of showing that we're getting past that and that, you know, we're uniting. We're having these battles out of respect and honor as opposed to, like, trying to kill each other. Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.